And welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features Interviews. Today we have a fabulous short film that's shot in black and white, Death of an Umbrella Salesman, with Steve Harold here. And we're going to discuss why umbrellas is my favorite thing to discuss, but we're going to get there. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here, man.
I got to start right at the beginning with my major question, why umbrellas?
Well, it really, the original idea... You know, as you know, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, sometimes these ideas just come from the strangest places, you know. And I was driving a friend and his wife to the airport, and I was using their car because I was going to drop them off the airport and then bring their car back to their house while they were away. So we're driving up there, and we get to the airport, and then, you know, we get out. They go to their trunk to get their luggage. And my friend, you know, he sometimes there's some, you know, peculiar things about him. So we open up the trunk to get their luggage, and he's got like 10 umbrellas in the back. And, you know, like most people, your reaction is exactly what, you know, I kind of had because, you know, a lot of people don't even have one umbrella in their car, and he's got like 10. But, you know, in that moment, it looked like the idea of like what the trunk of like a door-to-door salesman would have, you know, and you know, and I think I made a stupid comment like, what are you, a door-to-door salesman now or something, like umbrella salesman now? And, you know, whatever, and driving back to bring their car back, that idea just kind of stuck in my head like this, like what would a door-to-door umbrella salesman, you know, what would their life be like, you know? And obviously the first thing I went to was just this sort of sad sack, kind of like down on his luck kind of character and, you know, just kind of sprung from there. And I mean, it literally was that, the idea just was that simple, you know, and it just kind of, thought I had something there we could maybe do something with, you know?
Okay, we got to back this up a bit. Who sells umbrellas door to door?
Well, nobody.
Okay.
Nobody. That's why his life is the way it is. That's why he's having such a horrible life. But you know what's interesting, man? I don't want to sound pretentious because I didn't think this when we were writing the film or shooting the film. But at some point, maybe when I was kind of finishing it up, I had this idea, you know, because... You know, when you're an independent filmmaker, you know, you have this uphill kind of battle trying to get people interested in your stuff or trying to get, say, a feature made. You know, that's why a lot of time we're making these short films to try to get, you know, use as a calling card to get a feature film made or what have you. And it kind of crossed my mind that, like, his struggle selling umbrellas door to door kind of reminded me, you know, in a weird, and I'm not trying to be like, you know, too pretentious or whatever, but it sort of did feel like you could almost use it as a metaphor, like trying to get a film made, you know, like just all these like doors trying to knock on and, you know, what you're selling, nobody wants or what have you. And when our first screening at a film festival, this other film, and I kind of kept that to myself at the time. And it was weird because after our very first film festival screening, another filmmaker, you know, that our film played with, his film, he just came up to me and he kind of mentioned that exact, he's like, you know, I kind of could, like, I liked your film, but like, you know, it kind of made me think of like, you know, you could use it as like a metaphor for like an independent filmmaker. And I was just like, oh yeah, you know, it's weird that you say that because I kind of had that same sort of thought, but you know, I just thought it was kind of like, you know, an interesting or kind of a weird, kind of occupation to kind of latch on to this guy whose life is kind of not in a good place, you know?
I'd be remiss if I didn't back this up. Why did the guy have 10 umbrellas in his trunk?
I honestly, he's just one of these guys sometimes just kind of like, you know, just kind of keeps putting things in his car. He's like, do I have one? Brings one in there, you know, and just kind of then realizes like, oh, I do. And, you know, it's just a weird thing. Like, I didn't get too deep into it because I know this dude and it's not that unusual for me to see he's got like, you know, 15 water bottles, you know, okay, in his car or what have you, or whatever. So I don't think I really dug too deep. I just kind of like, you know, yeah, that's Pat, you know.
Okay. I have to ask. I feel
no,
bad.
I understand. Believe me.
Okay, I got a weird question for you as a filmmaker. You use two houses I definitely noticed very similar. The first house he goes to has one door up steps, and then he goes around and goes to the second door.
Right.
You use a very similar house later on in the film that's all boarded up.
Oh, yeah.
Now, was there a reason why we're using the similar house twice?
No, and in actuality, the first house, I mean, I needed, my dream location would have been there were two houses really close to each other, and in that first shot, which you're talking about, he would go up to the one door, knock, blah, 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 and then he would go to, you know, just the next door, so you're just seeing that he's just working his way down the block. But I couldn't find, the only location I could get through people I knew when I was asking around, does anybody know, blah, 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 was a friend who knew the woman who owns that house that was like a duplex, you know, or had the two houses. But that was in New Jersey. That shot was in New Jersey. The house you're talking about, the boarded up one, that was in Baton Rouge where we shot the bulk of the movie. But there was no, you know, that first house, there was nothing about them that was supposed to be kind of, you know, suggesting anything or commenting on anything. It was just that, you know, that was the house I had access to where there were like sort of two doors. And I kind of been at a few screenings, and I think a lot of time when people see that first shot, I feel like there's a lot of times, sometimes it gets a laugh when he comes down, he starts going to the next door when people know where he's going. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I'm interpreting their laugh almost like they think he's like just going to knock on the same guy's door or whatever, yeah. You know, instead of it being a separate house or apartment or whatever. But, you know, so I've seen it play like that sometimes in audiences, and I get the feeling sometimes that I think they think he's just going to knock on the same guy's door, like be a nuisance or something. But that was just the location I had access to, you know.
So long. We're talking about Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or another Baton Rouge?
No, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
So how do you
– Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, just let me finish. Sorry. You go from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, back to Jersey?
Yeah, well, I live in New Jersey. I work in TV. I'm working on the road a lot. I worked on a show for the Discovery Channel called Killing Fields, like a cop show. We shot the first season in Baton Rouge, and we were there for almost 8 months. And then when we went back for the second season, we get back to Baton Rouge. I know we're going to be there for 7 or 8 months. And, you know, my fellow crew, you know, we have weekends off. And I just talked to like some fellow crew members, and I had the script already, and I was going to shoot it in New Jersey. I do a lot of my films in Asbury Park, and that was the plan. But then when I went back for the second season, I was like, hey, you know, we're down here. It'd be all my, most of my stuff I've shot in the same sort of area. It'd be interesting to shoot in a location that I'm not from, and I don't know the nooks and crannies of it. And I had access to friends who were crew members who were willing to help out. So I thought it'd be interesting to, hey, we're down here for 8 months. Let's shoot a short film, a couple of weekends we'll shoot it. And it turned out like the DP, Jessica Gurney, who's a friend of mine, she happened to be shooting that Duck Dynasty show up in near Shreveport. So she wasn't too far away. So I called her up and I was like, you want to come down and DP this? So what happened was there were a couple of scenes, a couple locations that I didn't really have access to in Baton Rouge. Like there aren't a lot of, I needed a steep hill, and there really aren't those around that we could shoot at. So I was like, all right, well, when I get back to, we were dark for a week on the show when I was back in New Jersey, and we shot what I couldn't do in Baton Rouge, I shot in New Jersey when we were dark 1 week.
Okay, we got a Baltimore questions here you've brought me up, but don't worry. I'm going to go back to the hill. First off, I want to discuss the Umbrella Salesman. Who is he? And where did you find
him?
Yes.
His name's Kevin Kolak. I did a short film years ago called H.R. Puke and Shit, which was about like a little – and the main kind of character was this little puppet. And I needed someone to play the puppet, and he, this was back in the day of getting all the headshots sent to you and everything, and he sent his headshot in, and I got tons of headshots for actors, tons of headshots for actresses. He was, I think, one of maybe two that I got where people were like, I'm a puppet, I have skills in puppeteering and stuff. So he came in, and we had sort of like the beginnings of the puppet with us for the audition. And so we had auditions in New York City, and he came in and he, you know, took this puppet and he just kind of did things with it that we hadn't even, like, we were just kind of moving the mouth up and down, real basic things. And he took it and was kind of, he brought it to life. I mean, essentially he gave it, like, you know, making expressions with it and stuff. So instantly it was like, oh, you know, he's the guy. And ever since then, you know, he's sort of like my go-to guy. I like working with him. We have a great time. He's easy to work with. He's really, you know, talented. And so, you know, whenever a project comes up, he's usually one of, especially in the acting department, he's like the first person I call on. I mean, this thing I kind of wrote when I started writing it. I mean, I knew he was going to play that part too. I knew he could pull off that kind of sad sack, you know, guy, no problem. And I knew he'd be great at it, you know?
Okay. You did bring up The Hill, and I was bringing it up anyway. Let's discuss The Hill scene.
Sure.
You made him crawl on the road?
Yeah. Well, he's a trooper, you know, like Kevin is a trooper, like to the point where, you know, I mean, as a director, I don't want him to get hurt or anything like that. And I'm constantly asking him, like, you know, we just shot another film recently, and you know, even on that one where it was like a little more physical, you know, I constantly am asking him, like, are you cool with this? Is there anything you're not crazy about doing or whatever? But he's, you know, just one of those kind of people who's just like, you know, I mean, he loves it. He's not like, you know, he's like, whatever whatever you need, he's cool with it. Like I've never asked him to do anything where he's been like, I'm not crazy. Like, and that's why I constantly ask him more than once, like, are you sure you're cool with this or what have you? But yeah, and I mean, luckily we shot that in, I think it was like November or whatever. So luckily, you know, like I wouldn't want to do it to him like right now. It's hot as hell here and the tar gets pretty hot. Like, you know, that would be like a little brutal, but you know. We did all right. It wasn't too bad, you know, it wasn't, you know. And I'll tell you another little trick, you know, a little thing when they're in that move in the movie, The Hill scene, we shot that in New Jersey, but when he passes out and lands on the ground, that's Louisiana. The part where he's like laying on the ground, breathing heavy and stuff like that, you know, we just needed the hill part in New Jersey. We just couldn't do that in Baton Rouge.
Did you have a particular hill in mind? Since you live in Jersey, you knew that's the one I want.
I really didn't because I thought we were going to do everything in Baton Rouge. And it wasn't until we started looking around for locations and stuff. A friend of mine, Tanner Short, who kind of was like the sort of like my right-hand man working down there because he's from there. And he was the first person on the crew that I kind of brought in to sort of help me find, like, when I said we need this or we need that location-wise, we would drive to take a look at places and stuff. But with Hills, that was when I was talking to him where he just kind of was like, there really aren't any around. And he told me about one place that was like maybe 45 minutes north of Baton Rouge. And I drove out there one day to look at it, and it really wasn't, you know, what we needed. So then that's when I sort of realized, like, we're going to have to do this in New Jersey. And I kind of had a couple of places in mind, but it was sort of like places I hadn't been in a while. So it's like, I need to go back and look at them. And when I went back and looked at them, I'm like, ah, they're not as steep as I want. But then I remembered that was shot in an area called Shark River Hills, at which, you know, the name should give it away. But there was one hill that was like famous for, like, you know, everybody wanted to go down it in their skateboards back in our, like, you know, dangerous youth, you know? And the minute I went over there to double check that place, it was like, oh yeah, that'll work. You know, that's the spot, you know?
Did you ever think this character should sell anything but umbrellas, or is that the whole joke?
Man, you're hung up on the umbrellas. No, never. It was always because the idea was always just, it was sort of like, you know, you're setting him up to fail. If he was selling iPhone cases, or if he was selling headphones, or if he was selling water bottles, it felt like probably kind of like the reaction you're having. It's like we needed to give him something that nobody is going to buy you know, it had to be just the most pathetic thing, or the thing that, like, you couldn't possibly imagine somebody selling door to door. I mean, you know, and we had to sort of set him up to fail. It's just like, well, this guy doesn't stand a chance, you know, it's just like instantly you're like, what is he doing? No one's ever going to buy one of these things from him, you know?
You say I'm hung up on umbrellas. Well, let's back this up a bit. Okay? Yeah. You have me having an umbrella Muriel. You have a courier with an umbrella delivery. You have drones delivering umbrellas.
Yeah.
Would you like me to discuss something else?
And the mural that you're talking about was a complete fluke. Like, I was driving, that's over by LSU, the university in Baton Rouge, and I happened to be driving. I might have just gone over that air to that neighborhood that way to get something to eat or something like that. I just happened to be driving down that road and I'm passing by. It's like a hardware store. And I just happened to see that mural and I'm just like, holy moly, like, you know, we've got to shoot there. And I, you know, contacted the hardware store. I was like, is it all right if we shoot there? And they were kind of like, well, yeah, whatever, who cares? And I even tried to find the artist after the fact to get, you know, permission for it and stuff. And they kind of were like, we'll try to find out who it was, but we don't know. There was no, like, nowadays, a lot of times, like, you see a mural like that, somebody will leave a signature or like a social media account or something. But yeah, I mean, those were just those were just kind of the things to make it even more difficult, you know, with him trying to sell door to door. It's bad enough he's trying to sell umbrellas door to door, and now he's got to compete with, you know, the UPS guy or drones, you know, and such, you know. Those were just kind of like, you know, just like, geez, you know, it's almost like, what the F do I have to do to sell an umbrella? Like, I got to compete against this stuff.
Okay, I still have more umbrella questions. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back. Okay. How many umbrellas were used?
Well, I think what I would do is we shot 2 weekends in Baton Rouge, and we shot one weekend in one day, and then like 2 days in New Jersey, but they were spread apart. And what I would do is before the weekend we were shooting, I'd go to Walmart buy in quotes, probably like 10 umbrellas. And then on Monday, after we finished shooting, I'd bring them right back and return them, get my money back. Perfect. And I did that every weekend. As a matter of fact, I think like the last weekend I had to do that, the last day we were shooting in New Jersey, the last time I had to buy umbrellas, I think I took like a picture in the Walmart and like of them in my cart with all the umbrellas. And I think I like posted it like, you know, like, thank God this is the last time I'm going to have to do this, you know, like. I was so sick and tired of having to go to Walmart and get all these umbrellas and then bring them back 2 days later or whatever. And they never asked. I mean, they don't seem to ask anymore. We just did a film. Like, when you work on like TV shows and stuff, they're always bringing stuff back, you know. And we just, the short film we just shot, we needed a big, like, old school kind of like metal trash can. And I got one at Home Depot, had one, and I got it. And, you know, it kind of got roughed up a little bit, not too much. But, you know, I left the paper, like, tag on it and everything. And I told one of the prop guys, I was like, because we wanted to pad it and stuff. And I'm like, and he's like, well, I got to, you know, rip this off or I got to glue it. I said, no, man, we're going to try to return that, you know. And it got like a little bit of like tape. Like residue still on it, and it had like not a crazy dent, but a little one and stuff. And I brought it back to Home Depot. I thought maybe they'd say something. They just returning it. Okay, bloop, 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 bloop. See you later. You know, and didn't ask. And the same with the umbrellas. Like I always felt like I was gonna go. I always went in there to return them with like a story, in case they asked, because I'm like returning 10 umbrellas that I bought 2 days ago. You know, and I always expected them to say something like, "Why are you returning these?" or anything like that. But Never once did they ever ask anything.
I promise my last umbrella question.
That's all right. That's all right.
Why Umbrella Unlimited? Just because nobody had that name?
I don't know. It just sort of sounded like, I think I maybe had a little bit of a backstory in mind where that he saw there's a gag that I cut out, not a gag, but a piece of dialogue I cut out that you find out that he shares a studio apartment with like five other people and stuff. And I always kind of had this backstory idea that he got into this, and he got this job through, like, he saw a commercial on TV where it was like, do you want to be a salesman? Blah, blah, blah. Like, call this number. We'll teach you everything you need to know. Blah, blah. And so, like, that name just sort of sounded like what one of those, like, if that company existed, like some company that was, you know, teaching people to be door-to-door umbrella salesmen, that just sounded like one of those kind of, like, cheesy kind of like fly by night scam artist kind of companies. That's sort of where the name came from.
Okay. How many doors did you film closing in this film? Did you cut any?
On YouTube, I have a bunch of like little behind the scenes videos and stuff like that. And one of them has every single door slam that we shot. But obviously we shot it, like we'd go to a house with a door, you know, we'd shoot a door slam at a house and we'd, you know, we'd shoot it from multiple angles so that I had options and everything. So, I mean, like every door we shot, like the door slamming behind, you know, the shot behind him, you know, looking out at him through the door from the side, you know. So, I mean, we shot every one of them like at least four times or something like that. But I think we went to, and again, like that was me trying to kind of get a little bit of the local flavor of Baton Rouge and Louisiana, the look. So it was important to kind of go to some different houses and just get some different looks. But I feel like maybe we went to like maybe six different houses, something like that.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
A tiny bit of a spoiler here, but I'm not going to spoil the ending. Don't worry.
How
did this guy get married? I could not figure that out.
I don't know either. I don't know. I mean, again, I think we had, there's a line in the movie about him being like, he could have been in a band or something, like, you know, without telling a joke, like there's something. So I don't know. Maybe this guy at one point in his life, maybe he had some sort of cool vibe about him or something like that. You know what I mean? Like maybe there was a time when Stanley Grimp wasn't such a sad sack, you know. Maybe he's just down on his luck. So I would probably suggest that were the case.
Okay, I'm going to gloss over this a bit because you made the move. You understand what I'm saying? He has a chance to make a sale.
Right.
He's got this. All he's got to do is do it and listen. Right. But he just loses it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm just thinking maybe he's just mentally gone. Like maybe you should just quit.
Yeah.
Like he is unhappy.
Well, that's, I think that's the thing. It's like if we bring him to that point where he finally, the one thing that at this point in his life, the one thing he needs is to just make a sale, you know, to maybe that will give him a little bit of confidence or maybe kind of, you know, give him a little hope. And it feels like he's finally gotten there and everything just kind of, it ends up going the way everything's been going. And I think he's just, that's sort of like that tipping point for him where it's just like, you know, maybe this is it for me, you know, like I give up, you know, and he just, you know, he needs to vent. He needs to get this all off his shoulders and everything, you know, and that's sort of where he just happened. That's where, when it happens to him, that's where he is, you know, and he just lets it out, you know.
Did you ever have a different ending from the ending you show me in the film? I mean, you do have a man that's the voice of reason to your main character.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm trying to hit around here. Was there going to be a different ending?
There was an idea for a different ending, and I think my instinct is to go in a sort of a different direction than the movie ends, which I think maybe you'll understand what I'm saying. And, but I kind of felt like, that wasn't really what I wanted to do with the character. But having said that, when I was editing on the, if you watch the version that's up on Amazon after the film, we have like some, I decided to put after the film, put some sort of like behind the scenes, some like, you know, extra, you know, features and stuff. And there's some interviews with the actors where we're at one of the film festivals and stuff like that, and a deleted scene or whatever. But we discuss, there's a one interview with Kevin, myself, and the DP, Jessica Gurney, where we talk about a different ending. While I was editing the film, this idea popped in my head, and I was like, oh, I can't believe I didn't think, you know, I was like, I should have shot that. We didn't shoot it. I don't know why I didn't think to do this. And I feel like I should have shot that to at least have this different ending that might have worked, that and definitely I think would have played more to my instincts, but I didn't shoot it. But I came up with a way that I thought we could maybe have it without having shot it. There was a way to maybe sort of suggest this alternate ending, and I quickly kind of put something together. I sent it to a handful of friends of mine, majority of them are other filmmakers, and just to see what they thought. And there were a couple of them who totally got what I was trying to do with it and kind of liked it. And then there were a couple of people who didn't like it at all. They knew what the ending was already. And then they kind of didn't like it so much. And I kind of felt like, well, if I were to just go, you know what, I'm going to do this crazy idea, I felt like I feel like it would be like kind of polarizing to the audience, you know. And so I just said, oh, you know, forget it, I'm just gonna go with the original plan, you know. So I don't know, that kind of answers your question.
It does. It totally answers my question. You know where I was going with it. I'm the music for the film. Where's your music come from?
The music was all done by my friend James Palmer, who actually co-wrote it and co-produced the film with me. And then he did all the music, but he wanted a different name in the credits. So his name, if you watch the credits, the name of the composer, it's like John Yahimbe. That's like his kind of whatever, his alter ego or whatever the hell you want to call it. But he did all the music and I was really like, you know, the main idea, like I, you know, with music, I really didn't know what we were going to do. And we had a conversation probably right after, like, you know, maybe in the middle of my editing, like when I was ready, like, let's talk about some music, you know, probably when I had like a rough cut for him to watch. And then we could kind of discuss like what stuff, what scenes need music or what have you. And I think I had watched, right before he and I had this conversation, I think I'd watched Boogie Nights, and the opening music to Boogie Nights, it's almost like this kind of carnivalish kind of music or whatever. Not like the disco song that kicks in, but before that, like, I think just like the opening credits, there's this kind of like music that almost sounds like a merry-go-round at an amusement park or something along those lines. And I just kind of was like, oh, you know, like that's kind of like that, you know? And so we discussed that, and then he just kind of came up with that theme, and I really liked it. I thought he nailed it. I thought he hit it out of the park. And then it became obvious that we should sort of just kind of be repeating that. You know, it just, I mean, it definitely plays into the atmosphere of this guy's life. I mean, it really sounds kind of like downtrodden and just like, you know, slugging along, just kind of trying to get by. And I really was happy with the stuff he came up with, you know.
Is there a prequel film for this character in you?
I'll tell you two things. I thought, you know, with social media trying to promote the film and trying to get attention to it, you know, and this is sort of the first time that I've really had to deal with that for one of our projects, you know. And So, you know, you quickly find that, like, you need this kind of content, you know? You need, like, just posting behind-the-scenes stills and stuff like that, you know, it only goes so far, you know? And so I started making some little, like, behind-the-scenes videos and things like that. And I had an idea, like I was telling you before, about this backstory that I had that he watched this commercial or whatever. And we had an idea probably when the film was done and we were about to start submitting to festivals or sometime around then. I had this idea to make like just a really quick little, I think it was actually going to be a fake commercial for the company. And I had a script and we were all ready to shoot it. And I think it was going to play the fake commercial for the company. And then it was going to cut to Stanley Grimp, the character in the film, seeing him watching the commercial and like maybe pick up his phone or something like that. But I thought that might have been good for like, you know, maybe like something to put on YouTube or Instagram or something to just kind of help promote the film. But, you know, it just kind of got caught up in everything and just never got around to shooting it, you know, and then it just kind of became something in the past, you know.
I'm pretty sure the black and white is just a cost issue is why you shot in black and white.
We didn't shoot in black and white. That was all post. We shot in color.
Really?
That we did all that in post.
Okay.
It was all done in post. It was all shot in color. And I mean I think part of the reason behind black and white A was partly because it just, you know, we early on we always kind of referred to him as sort of like a man out of time, you know, or a man like in the wrong time period or what have you. So black and white played into that. And I also, even though I know a lot of these weren't in black and white, but for some reason I just always had this idea of like, I don't know if you remember that back in like, you know, I'm sure you've seen them. I've seen them. I don't know. I guess they were in the 50s or something. They used to have like those like kind of almost like propaganda, like PSAs, yes, like yes. Don't smoke cigarettes and all like, you know, it was like, you know, the kid turning into a werewolf because he smoked a joint or something like that. And for some reason, I know that a lot of those are in color, but for some reason, when I think of them, I think black and white. And for some reason, I almost sort of saw this like kind of existing in that world, you know, even though there are drones and cell phones, but like Stanley Grimp, you know, and even Sabrina Gennarino's character, the woman, you know, they feel like they're from that time period kind of, you know? And so, I mean, that kind of was why, I think pretty early on, I knew that it was going to be in black and white, you know?
Fair enough. So you've taken this on the film festival circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you've gone. So how was it received?
Pretty good. You know, I mean, I think we had a pretty good run at festivals. I was able to go to a few. I went to, got in some, couple in New Jersey that I was able to go to. I was able to go to one in Orlando that we got into. And I also we got one in Australia that I went to.
Oh, wow.
And it was really, it's always great going and seeing these things with a crowd because, you know, you just don't know when you're doing this stuff, like if it's working or if it's playing, and you can give them to people, you know, and stuff and get some feedback or whatever. But, you know, seeing it with an audience, I mean, that's why, you know, we make movies because we want, you know, for an audience to see them, and being able to go and watch with an audience and see what's kind of working. And it's always interesting, like what things play in different crowds. Like, I mean, the reaction to this in the screenings I've been to, I mean, everything kind of plays about the same. There were like one or two things in Australia that got laughs everywhere else that didn't get as big a laugh in Australia. But there was also some things that got decent laughs here in the States that got really big laughs in Australia and stuff. So that was kind of interesting. And I also went to it screened at a festival, the Louisiana International Film Festival, which is in Baton Rouge. We got into that, which was nice because this, you know, the same as like me getting into a festival in New Jersey because I can invite family and friends and stuff. But in Baton Rouge, like the people who worked on the film, the people who were in the film, were able to, you know, Sabrina at the time was living in New Orleans, so she was able to come up. So, you know, they all had like a screening where we all kind of got to like reunite and hang out and enjoy it with the crowd and everything. So it did fairly well. You know, I was pretty happy with how the festivals went, you know.
Good to hear. It's time for fun questions now. I hate to tell you.
That's okay. All right. Lame on me, man.
Your favorite film?
I'd say, I mean, I'm definitely one of those kids who has the Star Wars story, the original Star Wars. That was like what woke me up, you know, and was like, I want to do that. But my favorite, and it's still a good, it still holds up. I watched it, I think, for the first time in a long, long time, maybe a year ago or something like that. And I still enjoy it. I still like it and think it's a fun movie. But I think my favorite film is Dazed and Confused.
Oh, Richard Linklater. That's kind of your filmmaking. I do think indie filmmaking is still Richard Linklater whenever I see them.
Say that again?
He's a very much still an independent filmmaker with a big budget. Sure. I mean, he has money behind it, but you can, they're very independent to me still as films.
Yeah, I was always, I love that film. And that's what you're saying about him is exactly true. And it always, I was so disappointed when he did the remake of The Bad News Bears, because I love that film. And I'm not big on remakes, and I always like when he I think it was like 2005 he did the remake.
I have not seen it. Shocking.
You don't need to. You don't need to. And
now I'm going to because I didn't know it existed.
Okay. But I mean, do you like the original?
I haven't seen it in a long time, but it's got Walter Matthau in it, so I'll love it.
Oh yeah, he's great. Well, but I was so disappointed when he was doing The Bad News Bears because I felt like if anybody. Like, he should be, like, the guy who's like, no, you know, like, remakes don't need, you know, it's like, we don't need to remake The Bad News Bears. So I was so disappointed when he did that. But his Bad News Bears, it just kind of like, Walter Matthau is like such a, like, he's not someone you in that movie, he's not someone you would look up to or want to be. But, and that was the mistake when Linklater made his, he had Billy Bob Thornton played that character.
I can see that.
And he kind of plays him like the cool guy. And it's like, that's not, you know, it's like that completely kind of messes up the whole thing, you know?
Matthau's not cool. Nobody wants to
be that. I agree. No, you shouldn't like want to be that guy. Like, you know, Billy Bob Thornton's got this sunglasses. He's, you know, he's like, you know, with the strippers and hanging out like, oh, he's the cool dude, you know? And he's like, you know, the kid's like, wow, you know? And it's like, no, he should be like the bum, you know, who's an alcoholic and he's a pool cleaner. He's like, you know what I mean? Like, he totally shouldn't be the cool guy, you know? Anyways, so sorry to ramble on for your first question.
Perfect. I love it. Your favorite weather?
Weather?
Yeah.
I mean, I live by the beach. I love the summers, but I don't like the I love being at the beach, but I don't like the crowds of the beach. I love the beach far more when the crowds are all gone. You know, even if you're still able to go swimming, that's great. But I prefer, like, not the crowds. So, I mean, probably, I guess, like, you know, late summer maybe, you know, like, you know, that kind of worked for you, man.
It's all good. I mean, you live in Jersey, so you have the Jersey Shores, which I've never been to. So I figure it's got to be put. I hear, okay, maybe you can answer this question for me. Do you guys have pool clubs? Do I have the right term for them?
There are some, you know, there are in, you know, even like by the beach where I live, there's certain towns that have like a pool club. Yeah, there are a few around. Yeah. Cool. I think it's more like, I mean, you wouldn't think it would be, but I think it's more like a rich person's kind of thing. Like maybe because there are tennis courts a lot of time attached, you know, but you'd think the rich people would be able to own their own pools. Yeah. Why would they? But I guess maybe it's like a social thing or whatever. I don't know.
Fair enough. But random question mixed in. Wasn't one of my questions. Your favorite restaurant?
Where I am, my favorite restaurant is a Mexican place called Jose's. It's been around for a long time. It's authentic Mexican food. It's my favorite. My favorite food is, like, and when I'm traveling, especially down south, I always look for barbecue places and donut places. But around here, my favorite restaurant is probably Jose's Mexican food place. If you're ever in the Spring Lake or Seagirt area in New Jersey, go to Jose's.
There you go. Tell everybody where they can find your film before you go.
The film is, our website is jointfilms.com. Facebook, it's Joint Films. Instagram, it's Joint Films. And Twitter, it's Joint Partners. And the film is up now on Amazon Prime to watch. And like I said, there's, you know, some extra stuff at the after the film to kind of enjoy.
Before we go, everybody, please see this film. I really think it's quirky and fun.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I do want people to know I did enjoy it. It's short. It's like 22 minutes, 25 minutes. I think it's 22:17.
I think it's like 17.
17. Go watch it. It's fun. So thank you for your time. You have a great night.
Thanks, man.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.